Welcome back to another edition of the Church and Gospel Podcast. I'm Ross Parker. I'm your host for today. And today we're going to have a conversation with one of my colleagues. We're wanting to maybe get our listeners in some way into the classroom. So we're just going to talk to faculty here over the next little while and just talk to them about what's going on from the classroom. And so get a summary of what's being taught and what's being discussed there. So with me today, I have my good friend, Dr. Ed Gravely.
Hello.
Dr. Gravely teaches New Testament, Biblical Greek, and just really does a great job for us. And so today we just want to talk about what is going on in his class. So let's start with that. What are you talking about in your class?
Well, let's see. Today is a Wednesday, so that means that we did Greek this morning, and we talked about the me verbs. I don't know if that means anything to anyone, but I also teach an upper-level History of Ideas course. It comes around about every other year, and it's a history of the Bible, and kind of where did the Bible come from? How did we get it? How was it canonized? How was it translated? It's sort of everything you ever wanted to know about the idea of the Bible. And so today we have been talking about the languages that went into the making of the Bible.
Okay. So what are some of those languages that are important to the Bible?
Well, I think if you ask most church people, you know, what are the languages of the Bible, everybody kind of knows Hebrew in the Old Testament and Greek in the New Testament. There is also some Old Aramaic in the Old Testament, particularly in Daniel. And then we also talked about this early Greek translation of the Old Testament that's called the Septuagint.
Okay. So why is the Septuagint, or this Greek translation of the Old Testament, so important for Christian studies?
Well, it actually helps in two ways. And this is sort of hard to explain without visuals, but so if you were to go back in time 100 years, and this is an oversimplification, but if you were to go back in time 100 years, the oldest really sort of complete copy of the Hebrew Old Testament that we have dated to the Middle Ages, the Leningrad Codex, as it's called. If anybody out there went to seminary and has a Hebrew Bible, the BHS, as we call it, the Biblia Hebraica Stuttgartensia, that's this Leningrad Codex. That's this medieval Hebrew Old Testament. And there are bits and pieces of Hebrew that were older than that, but there wasn't a whole lot that was older than that. Well, that's thousands of years removed from the writing of the Old Testament. But we did have this Greek translation of the Old Testament, the Septuagint, that goes back to the 200s and the 300s BC. And so even though it was a translation, and translations aren't a perfect way to figure out what the Hebrew word that was behind the Greek word that got translated, if that makes any sense, but it was considerably older than the Hebrew text. And so there used to be, 100 years ago, there was this huge debate over which is a better way to try to get at what Moses originally wrote. Is it this much later Hebrew manuscript, because Moses wrote in Hebrew, or was it this much earlier Greek manuscript, the Septuagint? But it's been translated into Greek, obviously. And then, of course, that discussion changed with the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls, where now you have much older Hebrew scrolls. And, of course, what the scholars discovered was is that when they compare the later Hebrew text or the earlier Hebrew text, the number of changes are very, very minor. And it's also the second thing is that because the Greek of the Septuagint is around the time, roughly hundreds of years, but around the time of the writing of the New Testament, the Greek of the Septuagint often helps us figure out how to understand the Greek language of the New Testament and how words are being used and that sort of thing. And in fact, the Greek Old Testaments exist. They were produced by Jewish people, but they actually exist in Christian texts.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. So that connects the Greek Old Testament translation, the Septuagint, and you've connected that in some ways with the Greek New Testament. So,
correct.
So maybe we can talk a little bit about that,
sure.
The Greek New Testament, and say a little bit about what you talk about in the class with regards to the Greek New Testament.
Okay, yeah. So again, this is a dramatic oversimplification, but if you think of the history of the Greek language, you have what we sort of call pre-Homeric Greek. And that Greek that goes beyond about 800 or 900 BC, that's the Greek that comes along before Homer writes the Iliad. Then you have what we think of as classical Greek, and that's that period from basically Homer to Alexander the Great, and I'll say a bit about that in just a second. And that's the Greek that when you think of like the ancient Greek philosophers, Plato and Aristotle and the playwrights and Sophocles and all those guys, that's their Greek. And it's dialect heavy, based on what city-state you're in. There are different dialects of Greek. But what happens under a guy named Philip of Macedon and his son Alexander the Great, all of those Greek city-states are unified. And when they're unified, what very quickly develops is a very simple, common Greek. I tell my students, like, if North America got invaded by the Chinese, and Americans and Mexicans were all conscripted into the same army, what would happen very quickly is we would develop a way to speak to each other, and it would be kind of an English-Spanish, a Spanglish, right? Well, Koine Greek, it's not that dramatic, because the differences among the dialects are not as big as the differences among English and Spanish. But what happens very quickly is you get a more simple, more streamlined, but still complex, but common Greek. And so if you hear people talk about the Greek of the New Testament being Koine Greek, that's just a Greek word that means common. And that period of Greek really lasts all the way into the Middle Ages, and that next phase is what we call Byzantine Greek, which is the Greek of Turkey and the Byzantine Empire. And then, of course, modern Greek is what modern Greek people speak.
So it seems like what you're doing in this class, in part, is pointing out some of the importances of connecting the disciplines. You made some connections there, even between history
Sure.
and the Greek of the New Testament. If a listener is listening and saying, okay, well, that's kind of interesting going on in the class, but how does this connect with why is this important to me? Why might this information be important to me as a Christian studying my Bible?
Sure. And this is a great question. I think that, first of all, we should all be very glad that we live in the era in which we live, in which almost all of this really hard work has been done for us. So you go to the bookstore, Christian bookstore, and you buy a CSB study Bible, or you buy an ESV study Bible, or an NIV study Bible. And what you've got there is you've got the work of scholars, centuries worth of work of scholars, to produce into modern English really reliable, accurate translations of all these old texts. And they've learned Koine Greek. They've learned all of its ins and outs, and they've figured out how to translate it in the best way possible into English. They've looked at the later Hebrew manuscripts. They've looked at the Dead Sea Scrolls. They've looked at the Greek translation of the Old Testament, and they've worked through to figure out how did these texts, what was the best way to read these texts, and how to translate those into English. So at that level, it would be, I understand. In other words, if somebody in the pew is thinking, this is not relevant to me, I get it, because somebody's already done the hard work for you. I want to give my students a window into what that looks like, because there's always more work to be done. I want my students to be able to, many of my students are going to take Greek or Hebrew, and I want them to be able to think through, here's this ancient Hebrew text, here's this Greek translation of that ancient Hebrew text, here's this Greek text that's being written by Paul and Matthew and Mark, and be able to sort of think beyond just the English Bible, as good as they are, to asking questions like, how do these words in the New Testament seem to be borrowed from the Old Testament? Or what does, when Paul uses this word justification, what does he mean? How is that word used in the Old Testament, for example, to help us understand how it's used in the New Testament? And so a lot of my students won't be working with those individual languages, but just knowing about them and how it came about is very helpful. And I think it also gives us a bit of a window. I don't want to be overly spiritual at this point, but I think it does also give us a window into God's sovereignty. When you realize the language, the state of language prior to the Hebrew in which the Old Testament was written, be very thankful that God waited until Hebrew came along to write his word, because you can imagine what it would be like to have a Bible, an Old Testament Bible that was done with pictograms or hieroglyphics, how much difficulty we'd have translating the Bible in that case and knowing what God's word is. And in the New Testament, I mean, it really is the perfect time for Christ to come into the world and for the missionary endeavor to begin, because thanks to Alexander the Great and his global conquest of the Mediterranean world, everybody in the day of the apostles, in the day of the early missionaries, everybody speaks Greek. It's a language you can write in. You can go anywhere in the world fairly safely because of the Roman roads and because the Romans had destroyed all the pirates in the Mediterranean. And so it really is knowing a little bit about that helps you also understand the perfect opportunity that God created for his people to get the gospel to the ends of the earth.
That's really insightful and a helpful reminder. One of the thought that I had as you were talking even there of recognizing the gifts that God has given to His church, and that includes folks who have done this hard work of scholarship and translation that we reap the benefits of as we were able to open up our English translations of the Bible.
Yeah, I always tell my students that we should always be very grateful for all of the advantages that God has given us that Christians in previous generations didn't have, and that Christians in other parts of the world right now would love to have but don't have. But we should never take those for granted, and we should never allow those to make us complacent, but rather they should make us even better stewards of the things that God's given us.
Well, Dr. Gravely, thanks for taking a few minutes today and coming by and telling us a little bit about what's going on in the classroom and how that can apply to our lives and to the lives of our listeners.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah. So keep tuning in. We're hoping to do more of these kinds of conversations where we get just a little window into the classroom and seeing how what we're doing in the classroom really is practically relevant for all Christians and for all of life. And that's what we're committed to here at Church and Gospel. We're committed to recognizing how the gospel impacts every aspect of our lives.